This interview is being conducted on Wednesday, December 3rd, 2014, with Mr. Joe Shulock at the Indian Prairie Library in Darien, Illinois. My name is Deb Barrett. Mr. Shulock was born on July 21st, 1922, in Mischendorf, Austria. He is a retired machinist and process engineer, and learned of the Veterans History Project through his great nephew, Joe Popowich, who is a librarian here at Indian Prairie. Also with us today is Mr. Shulock's daughter, Joanne Klima. Mr. Shulock has kindly consented to be interviewed for this project. Here is his story. So, Joe, where were you living when you entered the service? What was your life like just before you went in?
Well, we had just moved from Fuller Park neighborhood to 76th and Bishop.
Okay.
My folks bought a house. It's their first house.
Okay.
I lived in Fuller Park for, I don't know, well, I was 20 years old when I moved, so. And I started to work when I was in the old neighborhood at Goodman Manufacturing Company.
Okay.
And at the time when I went in there, they were doing government work. We're doing war, making parts for howitzers and stuff.
Okay.
Like that. So that's how I got hired. I had a pretty good job for a kid, you know.
Yeah.
I went for one time to get my income taxes done, and a guy looked at this. This kid is like, he's making more money than me. You know, that's the impression I got. You know?
Right. So what was your job? What were you doing?
So I was working on a single spindle drill press.
Okay.
And we worked piece work. You might so many pieces a day or whatever.
Right.
And this was a good job. I was making like $90 a week.
And how old were you?
How old? I was 20 years old.
Okay.
So it was pretty good. And one day, my mother was looking through her magazines, and this little card pops out, and it was for a draft. Here, I could have got
an exemption?
Yeah, exemption, because I was doing more work.
Okay.
But when I brought it into work, they said it's too late. It was, you know, I was already being processed for going, so.
Because it had gotten stuck between the pages of a magazine,
right,
or something.
So that way I got drafted.
Okay, so were you, you were 20 years old, you were living at home with your parents.
Yeah.
So you were born in Austria?
Yeah.
So when had your parents immigrated?
Well, my father came over in, I think it was in 21.
Okay.
And then he sent for us, and I was 1 year old when my mother and I came to this country.
Okay. Why had your family decided to immigrate?
Well, he wanted jobs.
Okay.
So he was, and my aunt, that's my father's sister, is the one, at that time you had to have a person to vouch for you.
Right.
You had to have a place to live and all that. It ain't like it now.
Right.
So that's how this all happened. So, we were living like on about 45th and Wentworth, and then during the war there, it started when they came over. There was a depression.
Right.
Okay. And if you had money in the bank, you couldn't take it out, but you could buy a house with that money. So that's what my aunt did. So we lived about 2, 3, 4 blocks down. She bought a 2-story home. So we lived upstairs and
she lived downstairs.
Downstairs.
Okay.
And it turned out pretty good. At that time, it was still the old-fashioned thing. You had to come downstairs all the way down to the basement. Like it was like an outhouse down there, you know. So they had the place fixed up. They raised the house, made a basement, put bathrooms in both flats upstairs, put a back porch up and down, and closed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They fixed it up pretty nice. So we lived there for, till I was about 20 years old.
Okay.
And then my folks bought a house on 76th and Bishop.
Okay.
So that's where everything started for me from there then.
Okay. Were you an only child?
No, I had two sisters.
Older or younger?
Younger.
They're younger than you.
I'm the oldest. And I had a brother, but he was born in 1942.
Oh.
So he's 20 years younger than me.
Okay. All right.
So I hardly knew the guy, you know.
Yeah.
I got drafted the next year. And,
right.
And then I was in for 3 years, so I didn't even see the guy, you know.
So your family had moved from Europe, and there was a lot more activity in Europe as far as war than there was in the United States.
We used to write letters back and forth.
Mm-hmm. So what was your parents' reaction when you got drafted?
What were they?
What was their reaction? How did they feel when you got drafted? Did they say you should go, or were they nervous?
Well, my mother was, yeah. She was, why did I have to go and all this stuff? But in the end, it turned out all right. So.
Okay. So you were 20 years old. You were drafted. Where were you inducted?
I was inducted at Great Lakes, Illinois.
Right, Great Lakes, the naval training?
Right.
So
not naval training, but wherever. They had Army.
Oh, okay.
They had an induction center, or whatever you want to call it.
So you were drafted into the Army.
Right. And then from there, I went to Fort Warren, California, Wyoming.
Okay. Well, let's back up. What do you remember about your induction? What do you remember about being sworn in?
Well, that was, you had everything you had to go in line for, get examined here, get examined there for different things. They had to take some tests.
Like written tests or physical tests? Or
mostly physical.
Okay.
There was a written test too, yeah, because they had, from that is where they determined where you were going.
Okay.
So, I didn't know until we went, but when I got to Fort Warren, Wyoming, we were a quartermaster.
Okay.
And then from there, we had a basic training, where usually what anybody does. Everybody gets the same kind of basic training.
So you were from, how long were you in Great Lakes before they shipped you?
Just 1 or 2 days.
And how did you get to Wyoming?
Train.
Was it a troop train or was it?
It was a troop train.
So it was all just troops on it?
Right.
How long did it take you to get there? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't know. I think it was about 2 days.
What did you do on the train while that?
That's it. That's all you did.
Did you know anybody else there?
No, I didn't know anybody.
You probably got to know a couple people on the train, yeah.
Then we got to Wyoming. It was a different story. Boy. And it was in the middle of winter, too. You know, it's January.
Uh-huh.
So it was pretty cold up there.
How did they get you from the train to the...
Truck.
By truck?
Yeah. Benches on both sides.
Okay.
And then...
out in the fresh air.
You're out in the fresh air, right. Then we went to the... Over there, and then you had to go through the line there, get all your clothes and everything, get signed to a barracks.
So what was your barracks like? Was it built to be a barracks? Was it something else?
Yeah,
okay.
It was strictly, there was like two stories, you know, two floors, one up and down.
Okay.
And floors were bare. There was nothing on them, you know, not even varnish or nothing, just
wood. Were they bunk beds or did you have in single beds?
No, I think we had single beds. I never had bunk beds.
Okay. How many men were in one area?
I don't even know. Let's see. Well, we were a company.
Okay.
And then they broke that down to platoons.
Okay.
So I would say there was about 100 or so.
Okay.
Of us, just in this one.
Platoon?
Platoon. And
so was it 100 men sleeping in that area?
Yeah, right. One of this side all
right.
Went down, and then some of them went up.
Okay.
And then they had a huge bathroom. No partitions.
No partitions, you're right.
Yeah, all toilets, all sinks and that stuff, so. It was kind of new, you know.
No privacy.
Right. And you had showers there.
So when you got all your supplies and you were assigned a bunk?
Right.
Where did you store your clothes? Where did you store your things?
They called it, you got a footlocker. It had to go on the end of the bed.
Okay.
And in there, you had to learn the tricks, you know, because officers used to come around for inspection all the time. So somebody tipped us off, you know, just take a bunch of socks and roll them up nicely, put them in there, your shirts, your underwear, whatever, and you keep them there. Never take them out. And then, because you got more than one set, you know, uh-huh. So that way when he came, you just...
Everything looked in order.
Right.
Where were the others that you were using every day?
Well, we had them in a duffel bag.
Okay.
Put it on the back of the bed over there.
Okay.
So when you got changed clothes and everything, and you send the stuff to the laundry, they had an army base laundry there. So
right.
You wash your clothes, you had to have your name on it and all that. They took care of all that stuff. So.
Uh-huh. So you had a sergeant who would come and inspect?
Well, no, I was a lieutenant.
Lieutenant, okay.
And once in a while, then he'd go to the, maybe once a month or every 2 months, the captain would come down. So he'd get there. And then they'd come and you had to make your bed.
Right.
In a certain way. And if he could lift that blanket up, you had to make it again.
And how would he let you know you had made it again?
He told you right there.
Okay.
So it had to be nice and tight.
Bounce a quarter off of it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, well, you get used to that stuff, you know. In the beginning, it was kind of tough, but... And we had a sergeant and a corporal, and they had a special room in the corner.
Okay.
And they slept in there. They were separate from us, but they took care of everything. They got us up in the morning. And
how did they get you up in the morning?
Well, they go around hollering, shaking the bed and everything, and then you could hear the bugler outside. He was calling for morning.
Reveille?
Reveille. You had to get dressed, wash quick, get dressed, go out. They raised a flag on there. We had, you know, inspection, personal inspection outside.
So how much time did you have from the time they gently woke you to get outside?
Not much, maybe a half hour.
Okay.
And then we all had to get out there. And then from there, we went out. We had to go to the drill field.
And what did you do there?
And there we had to do the exercises there.
Like calisthenics, right?
We had to follow whatever the sergeant taught. And then, of course, later on, then they took... Each guy got a turn to go up in the front and do whatever he wanted to do, and the rest of the people had to follow.
Okay.
So that was the best part.
And what did you do when it was your turn?
Well, I used to like to do, I don't know what you call it, but up and
jumping
down.
Jacks?
Jumping jack, and then I'd go down and do push-ups on the side, and everybody hated that. But that was my favorite one.
Okay, so you did your calisthenics, and then you went to breakfast, or?
Well, first of all, when we left from our barracks,
uh-huh.
We had a run from there to the
field
and back again.
Everything was running.
Everything was running to double time.
Okay.
So you know, I went in there. I was 150 pounds.
Uh-huh.
And when I went, at the end of basic training, I was 180, and I was in the best shape I wish I could have stayed like that.
It was all muscle, right?
Oh, yeah. They really got you in shape. You know, you had the same meals all the time, breakfast, dinner, supper, certain time.
And good food.
You had a schedule.
Yeah. So when you finished your calisthenics, go ahead.
Then we went back, and
you went back to the barracks?
We went back to the barracks, and then you got assigned to, it was in a quartermaster, they gave us tests and everything, and then you had a job. You had to go to a certain school. Like I was going to gunnery school. First I went to machinist school, their school.
Uh-huh.
So when we went, then we went every day to see what we could do, you know, on different machines and all that. And then they used to grade you on this and all that. And the whole problem with what I saw with that was, I mean, you're going to school for this, okay?
Right.
And then you think you're going to get a job like that. You're wrong. There was nothing like that. I never had any job in the Army that I was trained for.
Okay. So you had your machinist class. I'm assuming in basic you also had some other classes about.
Well, I was in gunnery school, and then I had to go. I was in a projector from the movies.
Right.
I had to show movies for classes, and that was about it.
Well, let's back up a little bit. When you had your basic training, which was 10 weeks, 12 weeks, your very first training,
12
weeks, you did the calisthenics, they got you in shape.
Right.
They gave you firearms?
Well, no, I don't think so.
Not in basic?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
Because we were quartermasters, so, you know.
So you, from the beginning, they had you separated as quartermaster? Everybody went through basic?
Everybody was quartermaster.
Okay. Everybody in your platoon was
quartermaster? Yeah, but they weren't all machinists. Some of them were different.
Okay.
I don't even remember. Some of them were office workers, you know.
Okay.
So that's how they...
So you didn't have to worry about dealing with firearms or things like that?
Well, I take that back. We had to go on the... what do you call it? We had to go on the... shoot at some targets.
Okay.
But this was when... You didn't have this rifle. It wasn't yours. It was from the First World War.
Okay.
That's how you were trained with these
right.
guns. And then you had to go and try it, see if you could hit the target. Then they had a moving target. You had to shoot that. And then they don't tell you this when you first go out there to get some cotton to put in your ears, you know. The first time you shoot that, you go ahead.
So was this the first time you'd ever handled a gun?
Yeah, I never shot a gun. Yeah. I never saw a gun even, you know. So this thing, boy, that really hurts right here. And this is the worst year, too, now.
So you have lost some hearing in that side.
Oh, yeah. And then being in the machine business,
right.
That's a lot of noise, too. You're in a factory, all these machines are running, you know.
Yep.
And even when you're making some cuts, these things squeal, you know.
Right.
You think nothing of this, you know.
Until years later.
Right. And then all of a sudden you can't hear this, you can't hear that. I went to the doctor this one time, and he was checking it, and he had a thing with a light on, you know, they look in your ear,
right.
And he had a clicker. And he's clicking this thing, and I ain't moving, you know. He says, don't you hear what that? I says, no, I don't hear that. Well, you need hearing aids.
Yeah. So firing a gun was a new experience for you.
Right.
What other types of classes did you have in basic? What other things did they teach you in your basic, those 12 weeks of basic training?
That was
just a lot of routine and getting in shape?
Yeah, right. That's all. It wasn't, marching, you had to, you know, that.
Yeah?
You had to learn how to do that, you know.
Right. So you were, you had all your exercises, you went to all your meals together.
Right.
How was the food?
Good. I thought so, anyhow. There was, you always got some people complaining, you know.
Uh-huh.
But I enjoyed it. It wasn't bad.
Could you have as much as you wanted? Did everyone just get the same thing?
No. You get as much as you want.
Okay. You worked it off.
Yeah.
While you were in basic, were you able to, did you get any free time?
Oh, yeah. After the night meal, you were free to do anything you want.
What sort of things did you do for entertainment?
Oh, I don't even remember what I did. Talk, play cards. You get used to a group, you know. We used to play pinochle.
Right.
And some of these guys, like from New Jersey, there was a couple of guys there, They used to come with this double binocular. I never played these things before, you know, so, but you learn. But now I don't know one card from another anymore.
So were you able to communicate with your family back home?
Oh, yes. They write letters all the time.
Okay.
I had a girlfriend. We got engaged before I left.
Okay.
So she used to write pretty steady. Every day, I think.
When you would go into town, did you go in civilian clothes or
did you
go in your uniform?
No, we never had those civilian clothes.
Were those shipped back home?
Yeah.
Okay.
We just army clothes, that's all.
So how did the townspeople react when they'd see you?
Well, we used to go to movies, walk around, see what's went to Hollywood. I'm going ahead of myself there.
Okay. So
In Wyoming, I didn't do much there because it wasn't that close to town, really.
Okay.
And so cold and everything, you know, you didn't have much to do there.
Just tended to spend the time, and it was winter, that's right. So you just tended to spend time indoors. So when you finished your 12 weeks, you graduated from basic training.
Right.
Did they have any type of ceremony? Or
No.
Where were you posted after that?
Then I went to Camp Cook, California. So that took about 3 days, but same thing, a troop train.
Where was it in California?
Camp Cook. Camp. That was near
Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara and...
So far south.
Yeah, and Lompoc, San Bernardino.
So from winter in Wyoming.
Los Angeles was maybe about 100 miles.
Okay. So you went from winter in Wyoming.
That's what fooled you.
Yeah?
California, yeah. In the daytime, you could wear suntans, you know what I mean?
But when you're, the mountains bring that cold air.
You had to have a heater in that barracks. And we had kerosene heaters there.
So when you went to California, what type of training did you go for? What type of training did
you? There was no training. We got assigned. What we got assigned to was a replacement depot.
Okay.
And what a replacement depot does, we were assigned as cadre.
Okay.
I was made a sergeant.
You were made a sergeant right away?
No, first I was
corporal.
Corporal. A T2. That was because of the technical stuff.
Okay.
Machinist. And,
right.
And then from there, I made a sergeant. So then what our job was, we were supposed to have people come in and we train them for replacements for somebody who was shot or whatever, wounded or what.
Okay.
And then... So then later on, it shifted the other way where we had to take these guys that were wounded and retrain them for going back to their outfit.
Okay, so you were made a sergeant. You moved from private to corporal to sergeant very quickly.
Right.
And that was because of the job.
Right.
So you were a sergeant and you were 20, 21?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So we were there for about 9 months or so, and then they told us we all get a furlough to go home, because when we come back, we're going overseas.
Did they tell you where you were going overseas?
No, they don't tell you nothing. So I came home.
How'd you go home?
I flew.
Okay.
And I had a... priority, because they were going to kick me off a couple of times, but because I was going overseas and we was limited, I had to stay home 2 weeks, and I had to come back, so we were limited on time, so they couldn't
kick you off the flight.
Know, right.
So you told your family you were going overseas.
Yeah.
Well, how was there?
Came home, I got married.
Well, that was quick.
Well, I told her, I wrote, you know, the letter. That I was coming home, and when she got married, she should have everything ready. When I got home, she didn't have nothing ready.
Okay.
So that was kind of tight because...
You had 2 weeks?
2 weeks. And you know that you didn't get no food. That a lot of stuff was rationed. So my wife worked for a small grocery store. So he managed to get his chickens and stuff. And we had to... Went to church and got married, and we had it in the basement. Had an accordion player there, and relatives all down there. We had a good time. And then I had a, that was about a, it took about a week. And then we had a week by ourselves after that. So, and from there, then I went back to California. And it was about a week before, later, we went to San Francisco, and from San Francisco we went overseas. But they don't tell you where you're going.
Did you go on a ship? Did you fly? On a ship. Okay.
There was nothing but troops out there. Well,
was it all Army?
All Army, except for the people that run the boat, you know.
They were Navy?
They were sailors, yeah.
Okay.
So that was a different experience.
Do you remember the name of the ship?
No,
Do you know about how many men were on it?
I think we were 5,000.
Wow, okay.
So there was a lot of people on there.
So what was, how long did the trip take?
3 months.
3 months.
Because?
You were zigzagging.
That's right. You can't go straight.
Right.
And you don't know where you're going. And we wound up at Good Enough Island. I never heard of it. Nobody ever heard of it.
Good Enough?
Good Enough Island. That's near, between Australia and New Zealand.
So did you didn't stop in Hawaii? You just went straight. You just went zigzag
away from Hawaii.
Right.
Or even the Philippines. We were closer to New Guinea.
Okay.
And on this island, we didn't do nothing. It was just like a staging area. That's all it was.
How long were you on that island?
About 3 months.
So what we where were you living while you were on that island? Did you have tents? Did they have buildings?
Yeah, we had tents.
How many men in a tent?
I think one, two, six, I think.
Six in a tent.
Because you had a, they had, we had, what do you call them, folding beds, canvas.
The cots?
Cots.
Okay.
Cots. So you had a, one, two, three, four, five, six, like that. And
around?
A circle, yeah. Tents hold a circle.
Okay.
So we weren't doing nothing on there, just...
Did you have, do calisthenics? Did
naturally, yeah, they make you do something. until they got the okay, that we went over to New Guinea then. And a ship came and picked us up and brought us to Guinea. And then we were supposed to do this work, what we were assigned to do, and... it took a while, you know.
So you were about 3 months on Good Enough Island.
Right.
Just basically passing time until they were ready to take you.
There was nobody else there.
Did you have any kind of job assignment while you were there?
No.
Okay. So then another ship took you. Right. How many men went on this other ship?
Well, it was just our company.
Okay.
Well, it was more than one, but... maybe about a couple hundred.
Okay.
And then from there, it wasn't a big boat or nothing, but just was a nice trip. You know, the water was calm and everything. It looked like you were a tourist or something. You know, the nice and blue water and all that.
That was a little contrast to your trip over.
Oh, yeah, there.
Were people getting sick?
The first day out, it was terrible. You had bunks you were assigned to, you six high. So I was on the bottom one.
Okay.
And the guy at the top got sick.
Oh.
And then, well, the bathroom is what they call it on the ship, they call it a head.
Right.
And you go in there, and oh, what a mess that was. Guys were heaving all of it. I was lucky, I didn't get sick. But I was pretty close to it from watching these other guys.
Yeah, that would do it, wouldn't it?
So that lasted about 2 or 3 days, and they were all right after that.
So they just, it was getting used to it.
Yeah, yeah.
When you were on that ship coming over, what did you do to pass the time?
Nothing, just go upstairs, look at the outside on the deck, pass the time, see the fish flapping around, the flying fish, the first time I ever saw one, going around the boats, you know, the dolphins, you see them around there. And then they had some entertainment once in a while. They had a chaplain there when you went to church. We all went in a special area there where it opened. We say mass. You want a confession? The whole one shot. That was it.
Yeah. When you said that people were getting sick, and it settled down after that. You also said you were zigzagging.
Yeah.
Did you ever see any enemy vessels? Did
no.
you encounter any problems?
No, but they had a practice every so often.
So you had drills, okay.
No, I mean the people have a ship.
Right.
They had a
okay.
sailors. They throw up these balloons and they'd shoot at them.
Okay.
50 millimeters, and then they had a 5-inch guns on there, and they used to shoot at these things. So they had a practice, I think once a week or so, I think we ought to do that.
So when you're coming across and you're seeing these exercises with the guns and stuff, it must have made the situation you were going into seem a lot more real.
Oh, yeah. You didn't know we weren't told where we're going, you know, so you don't know.
You still didn't know where
to
go.
When we got there, they told us this is good enough island. And then they didn't tell you no more after that. Then we were going over to New Guinea.
So when you went to New Guinea, they said you're going to New Guinea. And that's as far as they told you.
That's all. Yeah.
So after Good Enough Island, you went to New Guinea.
Yeah, right.
And on the other boat, on the Calm.
Yeah, but
the tourist cruise, yeah.
There was the same thing. And when we got there, then they already had tents there already. We didn't have to put any up.
So okay.
We were assigned to this special area that settled in, and that was it.
And that's where you stayed?
Right. Stayed there for almost a year.
Okay.
More.
So what was your job while you were on New Guinea?
Well, same thing. Like, did you get these wounded people that come from the hospital to our place,
uh-huh.
and then there were a holding area for them.
Right.
And we had to take these guys, veterans, you know what
right.
I mean? We were nothing, and they were in there, but they didn't want to do this exercise and all that. It was hard.
So you were basically helping them with physical therapy.
Right.
Okay.
And then we had a headquarters. They were, as soon as they find an opening for these guys, they ship them back to their outfit.
So these guys, they must have told you how unhappy they were at times.
See, come out of the hospital, they didn't do nothing, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So when we come back, he's trying to get a little bit of shape, but they didn't like it at all. It wasn't easy to deal with these people.
So did you find any little tips or tricks that helped you deal with these guys, or?
You get used to it, you know. You get to talk. I know what your problem is. You know, just got to be reasonable with them. You know, that's all. I didn't want to force them on anything, you know.
Right. So you did that for a year while you were there.
Right.
So while you were there, you did this 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day?
Well, until the evening meal. After that, they used to go out in the woods someplace. You always got these guys, you know, they want to make money.
Yeah?
They either build a gambling rack there, go out there and shoot craps. I was never a gambler, so I didn't get into that stuff.
Okay.
But that's how a lot of these guys made money, you know.
Uh-huh.
In fact, my buddy, he was from California. He was a little guy. He had a little crook in his wrist. I don't know what he'd done when he was a kid. He had polio or something. But he could cut hair. And when you could cut hair in the Army, you were like a god, you know what I mean?
Okay.
You charge a quarter for a haircut, you know. So he lasted, oh, maybe about 6 months in our outfit. Somebody higher ups heard about this guy, so they...
They wanted him.
They took him from our outfit and put him someplace there where the...
He could get there here.
Officers could use
him. Yeah.
So he got a good deal out of it.
So what did you do when you weren't working with the veterans?
We used to get so much rations, like cigarettes, cigars, beer. You get so much a day, you know.
Okay.
Or a week. And I didn't smoke cigarettes. I got started over there with the cigars.
Okay.
That's how I got started. Because I didn't want to drink beer. I didn't drink much beer either. I traded my beer for cigars. Because everybody got so many, so built up. I got quite a few. So nobody had to send me cigars. I had enough over there.
So you did. Your family was able to contact you to send you information?
Yeah.
Or send you stuff?
My wife used to send me salami and cookies and all kind of stuff.
So you didn't go hungry while you were there?
No.
Did you share them with the other guys? Did everybody share everything?
Yeah, you could eat all this yourself, you know. Especially, she used to send a whole salami. So, and that was... You didn't have no refrigeration.
Right.
So
you just did what you could. You shared so everybody got some.
Right.
Okay. What were there any limitations on your communication with people back home? Were your letters censored?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's why you got to watch what you write.
Were they censored both ways or just?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, when it came back, yeah, they opened them. Yeah.
So was it the just blacking it out or cutting it out?
No, they just blacked it out.
Did you ever get any letters from home that you stuff was blacked out?
No.
Did your wife ever or your family ever get anything?
No, I never.
Okay.
I didn't have nothing to tell them.
So you said that you got cookies and things from home. What were your meals like while you were in New Guinea?
It was the same thing over there. It was just that you had to stand in line outside. That's all, you know. They had a big tent for where everybody sat and ate.
Okay.
And that you had to get in line. And when you went through, they just throw so much. You didn't have to take it if you didn't want it.
Uh-huh.
You could pass it up. But you usually took everything you had.
Did you get some fresh fruit or anything from there?
No fresh fruit. We didn't get much meat eat, like steaks and stuff like that. Because they didn't have no place to keep it. Eggs. We never had eggs either. You used to get the
powdered eggs.
Powdered milk.
Lots of powdered.
Everything was powdered. And I was a milk drinker. I didn't get any more milk until we got back to the States.
What was your favorite meal there?
Oh, I don't know. I don't even remember what I ate over there. They used to call it, I don't know what they call it. I don't know.
The chip beef?
What?
Chip beef?
That's it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing. I liked it.
Yeah?
I liked that. But that ain't what they called it.
I know that's not what they called it. And it was on a shingle, too.
Yeah.
So, while you were in New Guinea, working with the vets and doing all this, did you ever leave the camp to go?
No, there was no place to go.
Okay.
No.
So you were always in that same area for the year?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, it was kind of boring at the time. Guys were getting out, transferred. The only trouble was you were a sergeant. You had to go back to private.
So you'd have to have a reduction in rank to get out.
Yeah, right. So I did that. But I was sorry later.
Why were you sorry?
Well, because I had to get out of the outfit,
uh-huh.
and I had to go someplace else, and I was just sitting around. They didn't find a place for me, you know. So that day, my company there got shifted to Philippines.
Okay.
And 2 days later, I got shifted to Philippines. And guess where I wound up? In their outfit.
But now you were private.
Now I was a private. And you know what? Them guys went from sergeant to staff sergeant.
Okay.
So I lost out on that.
Right.
I tried to get back in, but it was too late.
Yeah.
I wound up in the infantry.
Okay.
And I was preferred to that. They had to be an M1. I never shot an M1.
So you just got a quick lesson. Here's how you fire it?
Didn't even do that. You just got it, went. And the first time we went assigned to an outfit, these guys were all, you had so many points and you get out. So these guys were all getting out, and that's where I was going to take their place.
Okay.
So they called us together, and then you go through the drill with your rifle and that, and then you're supposed to stick your finger in there and take that bullet that's in the chamber and put it back in the magazine. Well, I thought I did it. So then you had to pull the trigger. Well, I had the gun like this.
Uh-huh.
Thing went off. Boom. The guy was a first sergeant, and he was shooting through the ward. He was shaking everything because I was doing it. I shot that thing. Boy, did I get it from that. Well, I never didn't do nothing. So a guy tipped me off. He was a corporal. They were a lot of volunteers for ward.
Okay.
He says, take it. It's a good deal. So I said, okay, I'll take it. And it was. So then I got rid of the M1, and I got a 45 pistol instead.
And what was your job then?
But then I was ammunition carrier for a while. And then later on, I got to where I was shooting the mortar. But anyhow, when we got overseas or from that outfit, then we were assigned. They were cleaning up over there. The war was actually over.
In the Philippines.
In the Philippines.
Okay.
And they were dropping pamphlets and everything. And Japs didn't pay no attention, I think. They didn't believe the war was over. So we were going through the woods and everything and finding these villages and everything where the people were. And you see how these Japs treated them. They're raping these women and tying them to trees. Stripping them and tickling them and everything like this. There was one old lady there. I could have cried even just when I saw her, what they did to that woman. But anyhow, that's what we were doing. But going to these places and cleaning up. And then.
So you were, at this point, you were 22, 23?
No, that's just 21. Maybe
22. Maybe. Okay.
So and as we're going along, you could see where they were bodies lying all over. Stinks like heck when you walk through there, you know. These bodies are all bloated up, all brown. And then we went to this one place where I guess they get notified that they think there's some Japs there. So they sent a group of guys down there. Before they went in, we had to set up the mortar, and we got an idea of how far they were. So we set the guns and blasted them a little bit, and then they got, so they don't get these Japs go undercover.
Right.
Not to shoot at them. So they got this one place, and there was a, I don't know what he was, he was a pretty high-ranking Japanese guy. He was wounded. He was laying in his bed there when they went in. And he shot one of our officers, shot him in the hand. But they got him then, so.
They shot him?
Yeah, they shot him. And then later on, we had to go to another place. We go to rice paddies. And you're going across, and some guys, one Jap was shooting at us. I don't know. They didn't know where he was in a tree, somebody couldn't tell. So they had to jump off from one these rice paddies were like this, you know, layers like steps, had to jump off into the mud. And then that night we had a camp. So yeah, when you do that, you have to dig a hole, foxhole for yourself to be in, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you had to drill trenches, so if the place relieve yourself, you know. Yeah. So come nighttime, you had to go into this, sit in your foxhole, and it start raining. So all you had is a poncho, put it over your head, right? You build up dirt around your foxhole, but the water still comes in.
Right.
And you can't get out, because you don't know where the guy's at. You'll shoot at us. So you're sitting in this foxhole, and your butt is wet, your feet are wet, everything. Well, it comes in the morning, then we got up and we stopped raining. I don't know, somebody must have spotted this guy, and they went down and they got him.
Mm-hmm.
So they brought him back up, and then we always had a strip, and he didn't want to take his pants off. I wonder why. When he took his pants off, it was a mess. They don't dig foxholes. They dig trenches. These Japanese.
They're small.
They're small. These things are like this. But what they had, and then they had a circle every so often where the guy, each Jap had a spot.
Okay.
But they had it so they could walk back and forth.
Okay.
We just to dig a hole in the morning, just cover it up, and we were on our way again.
Okay.
They were stuck in. Well, they were there for so long, you know. So you got to give them credit for playing. And they, all they lived was a handful of rice. That's all they ever had.
Wow.
Where we had K rations, C rations. K rations was mostly dry stuff.
Okay.
And the other one, the C rations were little cans.
Okay.
Of different foods, you know, sausages or frankfurts and beans and stuff like that. It wasn't bad. The only thing we didn't have much to drink, most of the water, and then there too we had when we went to a stream or something, you had a canteen and mm-hmm. you fill it up, then you got some pills you had to put in there.
So it was safe to drink.
Right. You had to wait about a half hour or so before it took effect. So.
Okay. So when you were going around cleaning out these areas in the Philippines, getting the Japanese, did any of them willingly surrender?
Well, yeah, they did. They had to. You know, but they kept going. They didn't talk.
Right.
They wanted to commit harakiri.
Right.
Yeah, whether it was true or not, I don't know, but that's the way they act.
Right.
But then they found out how good they're getting treated, you know. We had a tent, and they put, like, branches, wires on it. We had somebody watch them all the time. But they seen how they were getting treated. They were going, okay, you know. Got nice, clean clothes, and fed them all the time and everything.
So how many, excuse me, how many prisoners did you have?
Oh, I don't know. We didn't have any, two or three at a time.
And then where would they go from?
Well,
once
they notified, I don't know who they notified, wherever they were, they had a camp someplace for them.
Okay.
And then we had a truck came in with guards, and they'd pick them up and take them back to where they go.
Okay. Did you get to know any of these prisoners at all?
No.
Did any of them speak English?
No.
Or that you, not that you knew of?
No.
Okay.
We had some, each outfit had one Filipino who could talk Japanese.
Okay.
And he would
translate
for the officers. We never had nothing to do with it.
Okay. So you were doing this cleanup in the Philippines for how long?
Well, until I had enough points.
And how many points did you have to have?
I forget what it was. Yeah, I had, I don't know, 50 or something.
And how did you get the different points?
Well,
part of it was time, right?
Right. How much time you had, how old you were, stuff like that, what kind of action you had and stuff like that, when you got your point. So I got my points, but I didn't go home.
Where did you go?
They shipped us to Korea.
Okay.
We were doing the same thing there, but not as an outfit. We didn't know one another or anything. But they were taking all of the Japanese that were running, they were like running the country,
right,
you know, for Korea. We all took them out of their homes and took everything away from them because mm-hmm. we didn't know it was theirs or it was from the original Koreans.
Right.
Put them on a boat and sent them back to Japan.
Okay.
And I was only there like 3 months, and then they found a spot for me and went on a boat there too, and we went from there to Aleutian Islands.
Up to Alaska?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I went to Aleutian, and I got a small, I don't know what you want, I don't know what, a destroyer, or maybe it was even smaller, I don't even remember. But we so many, there wasn't a lot of guys, maybe a couple hundred guys, that's all they could take.
Uh-huh.
And then the Navy crew, and from there, it wasn't like a ship, you know. You just had this, and I was like the ship, you got a point like this.
Right.
And I was in a bump.
You were at the point.
When we were going from there to Washington, when that thing came out of the water, and that wave hit that thing, you think it's coming in.
Yeah.
That's how hard it hit, you know.
Wow.
And then when you had to go to eat, you had to go up on deck, and the thing is rolling like this.
Rolling side to side, yeah.
Tied across there. We went from there. We had to hang out to that rope to go to the mess hall to eat.
To make sure you didn't go overboard.
Right. And there they had like tables like this on dinner.
Wow. Like conference tables, yeah.
So you had to stand there and eat. Every once in a while, you had to hold your tray. And every once in a while, you take your hand off and the thing goes flying away.
So was the trip to the Aleutian Islands, that was just a stopping point to get transferred?
Yeah, from the one boat to the other.
Okay.
The boat we were on from the Korea to the Aleutians was a pretty big boat.
Okay.
But the other one was smaller. So went from there to Washington. Seattle.
The Seattle area, okay.
And then Seattle was only there about 3 days. But when you got there, you were treated like a king. You could eat anything you want. I had steak, I had a quart of milk, and whatever else I wanted. But it was a sorry story because my system wasn't used to that.
Right.
So drinking its milk. You know,
sick.
Well, I got sick, yeah, and from then on, I wasn't good with milk no more.
Okay.
So I had to get used to it.
So was this a military base that you were at?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember the name of the base? Is that where you were discharged?
No.
No, okay.
From there, I went to Camp Coy, Wisconsin. I got discharged there.
Okay.
McCoy.
Camp McCoy, that's Wisconsin.
That's
right. That's what you just said, though.
Yeah. I didn't say you were in Washington.
No,
that
doesn't.
Okay. So you were in Washington in the Seattle area for how long?
Just 2 days. Yeah. Oh, that's a separation.
Yeah. So when you... You got to the Aleutian Islands, that wasn't a state yet, Alaska. So when you came to Washington, that was the first time that you were seeing the U.S. again.
Right.
So what was that like when you were pulling in?
Well, it was different.
Okay.
It's always drizzling over there.
Yeah.
So you had to get used to that, going from one place to the other. There we got all new clothes and everything, you know.
New uniforms?
Yeah, everything. I got an overcoat on because you didn't have that from
right
over there. So then we got a troop train.
Okay.
And just car seats. I mean, just regular.
Right.
Didn't lean back or not. 3 days. 3 days and three nights.
Wow. Did you know any of the other guys on the train at that point?
No. Those were different guys.
Okay. But it was probably good to...
Yeah, well, you stopped every so often.
Uh-huh.
You know, where they'd bring lunch, sandwiches and stuff.
Okay.
And you could buy souvenirs and everything if you wanted to, if you had the money, you know.
Uh-huh.
So we got to Camp McCoy.
Now, did your family know that you were on your way home? Did they know? When did they know that you were back?
I don't know if I even told, because everything was so secret all the time. You know?
Right.
They didn't tell you nothing. You just got on there, and that was it, you know. I told them I knew I was going to Camp McCoy, but by the time, if I sent them a letter, by the time they got it, I was there already.
You know? Okay, yeah.
So, it's probably the same train as I was.
So you got to Camp McCoy.
Right.
And how long were you there?
I was just there, I think about 2 days. That's
okay.
All. And, well, there you had to go and you had to sign all your papers. And if you want to file any claims,
mm-hmm.
anything, you know. And there, you know, you don't realize it at the time, but you figure, I'm not finding nothing wrong. I want to get out of here, you know.
Uh-huh.
But then later on, if you find something wrong, then you couldn't do nothing about it no more. You know what I mean?
Because you said you were fine.
Right. So
the purpose of going there was really your discharge.
Right. That's
okay.
All it was from Camp McCoy. Yeah.
Did they try to talk you into reenlisting?
No, they did that in
Seattle?
No, in Korea already.
Oh, okay.
I could have, if I reenlisted, I'd go to Europe. I was tempted, but I says, what am I going to do? I was married. I don't know if she would have wanted to go there or not, you know, because she wouldn't know nobody either, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said, no, I'm not going to get out.
Yeah. So you got to Camp McCoy in Wisconsin.
Right.
You went through all the paperwork. You signed everything you needed to sign. How did you get back to Chicago?
Train also.
A regular?
Regular train.
Civilian train.
Yeah, right. Went to Union Station, and from there, Union Station, my brother-in-law, my sister, and my wife picked me up. I had a 39 Chevy.
Okay.
When I was working, I bought that car, and when I left it, when I went up to the Army, I put it up on blocks. My brother-in-law used to use it sometimes if he would come home on furlough, and then he'd put it back up on blocks again. So I had that car all the time.
Okay, so they knew you were coming.
Yeah. Well, I could call from Camp McCoy.
Okay.
And, in fact, that's what I didn't write a letter from.
You called from Camp McCoy.
I called.
Your family must have been so excited.
Yeah, it was different, you know. Yeah, I came home. I had a brother who was, 2 years old. Never knew.
So you were, when you left, you were 20. You came back, you were 22.
22, yeah.
Okay, yeah, with a little brother to get to know.
Right.
And what was life like when you got back home? What did you have to get used to?
Well, you had to make a decision.
Okay.
I wanted to go to school.
Uh-huh.
Because GI's going to pay for it. But, see, my wife's folks were the same way like mine. They came from Europe almost the same time
mm-hmm.
mine did. And around the neighborhood, you know, they all knew I worked at Goodman's. Oh, go back to Goodman's. They're giving you all vacation from when you left and all that stuff. You know, go there. So I, like a dummy, I went.
Okay.
And they gave me my job back. I worked there for about maybe 2 years or so. Well, maybe longer. 46.
About 4 years.
So 52.
Yeah.
And so And then I left there and I went to Continental Camp.
Okay.
And it was a better job. So I went there and I worked there for 23 years.
Okay. Did you ever go back to school?
No.
Okay.
I took a couple of, courses at home, you know.
Okay. Correspondence courses?
Yeah, correspondence.
Okay.
Radio, television, but I didn't stick with that either.
Okay. So you settled back home. You went to work again. Did you keep in touch with any of the guys you met in the service?
Well, for a while we did. We wrote letters back and forth. But for my original outfit, you know, I didn't have their addresses and all that no more.
Mm-hmm.
But one day they surprised me.
Oh, yeah?
There was about 6 or 7 guys, and they, I don't know how they found me, to tell you the truth, and they came to my house. I was a complete shock, you know.
These were guys from your basic?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I had a wife and 2 kids, you know. And that's how long it was before they decided to come. Well, I didn't know what to do, you know. Got a football, and we went out in the street, we were throwing it back and forth, drinking some beer. That was about it. I never saw them again after that.
Okay. Did you join veterans groups at all?
No.
You participate in any reunions other than that informal one?
No.
So it was, you had your service, and it was in the past, and you
right.
just moved ahead
yeah,
with that.
Right.
How did your military experience affect the way you think about war, maybe how you think about what's happening in the world today?
Well, it's different.
Okay.
War changes. You know, like I'll take the First World War. They just dug a big trench, and some enemy dug a big trench, and they were shooting at each other. And if you thought you got the better of them, you went and rushed them and got them. It's World War II, you went foxholes, and you went underground traveling. Next war, over there in where the Arabs are,
mm-hmm.
that's a different story too, because they got all these bombs there. You got these guys with their vests.
Suicide vests,
suicide.
Yeah.
So the war changes all the time. It's different.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to be there today, I'll tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's altogether different. And from what I've seen of the war myself, I was thinking if we ever had attack here, it would be a disaster. Because people here are too comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what's going on. You know, what war really is.
Right.
When you see it, it's a different story. When you see, like, I can tell you, this old lady and all these young girls and all of this stuff, the way they were treated and everything. And they took everything away from them. These people didn't have nothing. They used to wash our clothes. And they used to take it down by the river. And we had it furnished with soap, and they made paddles. And
beating them on a rock.
Beating them on the rocks. That's how they washed the clothes.
Right.
But that's how they made a living after that.
We mm-hmm.
made them out of 25 cents or whatever. I mean, it was nothing for us, you know. But for them, it was something.
Right.
They lived that.
Right. How did your service and those experiences you have, how did they affect your own life?
I don't know. It didn't affect it much.
Okay.
I don't think so. Nobody asked me nothing, and I didn't tell them nothing.
You put your time in and
right.
got out.
Yeah, right.
Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to bring up before we go off record?
I think that covers it.
Okay. Well, in that case, thank you very much for sharing your story. Thank you for your service, and we are going off record.